welcome to the Messiantics Podcast, a podcast about all things Messianic Judaism. Each episode, we will be sharing our opinions as we tackle some of the biggest issues in Messianic Judaism. Now, here's your hosts, Rabbis Eric, David, Jonathan, and Toby.
Hey guys, thanks for joining us for another episode of the Messiantics Podcast. Today we're going to dive into something that I think is kind of interesting. We have a ton of overall just massive division in the body of Messiah across the board, not just within Messianic Judaism, but the body of Messiah as a whole. And so we wanted to kind of dive into a discussion on some of that based out of something that we find in Luke 9. This is particularly verse 49 and 50. Luke 9, 49 and 50. John replied, "Master, we saw someone driving out demons in your name, and we tried to stop him because he doesn't follow along with us." Verse 50, Yeshua said to him, "Do not stop him, for he who is not against you is for you." And I think it's a really interesting statement to see from Yeshua. You know, John isn't saying that this individual wasn't a believer or wasn't a follower of Yeshua, just that he wasn't part of their group. He wasn't in their circle of friends or what have you. He wasn't one of the regular disciples that walked with Yeshua. And Yeshua said, "Look, don't try to stop him. Let them do what they're doing, because if he's not against you, he's for you. He's one of you. He's a part of you. Even if he's not running in this circle specifically, if he knows who I am, he is part of you, and you are part of them." And so I just wanted to kind of have that conversation based off of that, because there is a lot of us versus them mentality in the body. We see it in Messianic Judaism in great effect across the board. We see it in the greater body of Messiah. You know, like I know there are, you know, aspects of the, you know, the Pentecostal movement, for instance, that are very adamant about, if you don't speak in tongues, you're not really a follower of the Lord. You're not really. And there's this like clear delineate, this is where the line stops. And if you're not part of us, you're not one. But that's just not a biblical approach to how we're supposed to do this. Like, we're going to have distinctions. We're going to do things different, right? Messianic Judaism and the greater church as a whole, we tend to do things rather different, right? But one of the things that's important is to understand that we're all a part of something greater than any singular organization, any singular denomination, any singular individual. We're a part of the kingdom of Messiah, right? And if we're all working towards the kingdom, then we're all in this together, and he who is not against you is for you. Now, obviously, there are things that we must divide over. There are issues that are so like dynamically important that we must divide over. And so today we just wanted to kind of dive into to that conversation. What's it look like to actually work together, even though we're a little different? What are the things that are important on the line? This is where you're against us rather than for us, kind of a mentality. And to that end, I also want to make a caveat, because I know eventually if we don't, somebody's going to throw it in the comments. But what about Yeshua saying this? So in Matthew 12, verse 30, Yeshua says, "He who is not with me is against me, and he who does not gather with me scatters." And it kind of comes across as almost contradictory to what we read in Luke 9. However, the difference is in Luke 9, the disciples are talking about somebody who is very clearly a follower of Yeshua, maybe not in this circle of the disciples, but very clearly a follower of Yeshua, versus Matthew 12, where he's talking about a group of Pharisees who had just attacked him verbally and accused him of driving demons out by Satan himself, by Beelzebul, by this demonic force, rather than recognizing the power of God in him. So the distinct difference is that in Matthew 12, Yeshua is saying, "Look, if they're not with us, they're not with us." Whereas in Luke 9, he's saying, "If they're with us, they're not against us." Does that make sense? And so I just want to point out there's a clear delineation, a clear distinction, a clear separation here in what these two passages are dealing with before we get any flack from anybody in the comments. And now we're just going to dive into the conversation.
Yeah, I find it interesting that both the verse from Matthew that you're referring to and the verse from Luke that you're referring to both have to deal with driving out demons. In one case, John tells Yeshua, "We found these guys who are driving out demons in your name." So they have been given the authority of Yeshua's name to drive out demons, but they were a separate group. In Matthew, Yeshua is being accused of driving out demons by demons. Mm-hmm. And so although they're different, clearly different examples, one is clearly this group is against faith in Messiah, and therefore they're not a part of us because they are unaccepting of the redemptive work of Yeshua, mm-hmm. where the other one is they have accepted the redemptive work of Yeshua. They are followers of Yeshua, at least to that point that we have in Luke, where he's given the authority to people to cast out demons in his name.
To that end, earlier in that same kind of contextual passage in Matthew 12, verse 25, Yeshua says, "Every kingdom divided against itself is destroyed, and every city or house divided against itself will not stand." Right? And so we're looking at this and we're talking about, you know, looking at Matthew 12, where you've got somebody that's not part of the kingdom that's making accusations at Yeshua that he is being demonically led, versus, as Rabbi Eric just pointed out, versus Luke 9, where it's very clearly that somebody is operating in the name of Yeshua. Like, he's not saying he's Yeshua, but he's operating under the authority of Yeshua, as we do as believers today. But it's as we look at this, and it brings up a whole other dynamic when we look at these two passages in juxtaposition of each other, is Matthew 12 makes it clear that a kingdom that is divided will not stand. How does that affect the body of Messiah today? How does that affect Messianic Judaism today? Because we are we not? Are we not divided across right. the board on so many different factors?
Yeah, I think by essence, and this is Rabbi Eric again, by essence, we have to determine first, what is the kingdom? Because in the case of Yeshua talking to these Pharisees, clearly there are two different kingdoms mm-hmm. at work there. Mm-hmm. And so this is not a case of a kingdom divided against itself. It's a kingdom divided against a different kingdom. Whereas in Luke, where we're reading, it is the same kingdom yep. being divided amongst itself, and that is what can't stand, mm-hmm. which is what Yeshua yep. was speaking against.
Well, and that's what I'm talking about, is that's the fact, is that right. you look at, for instance, the thousands of denominations that exist, right? Even with the Messianic Judaism, we're a small aspect, a small piece of the body of Messiah. Messianic Judaism, you have the MJ-IMCS, you have the UMJC, you have Tikkun, you have Shuvu, you have Chosen People Ministries as their congregational wing, you have this new pseudo-Orthodox, whatever Messianic group that's out there and are trying to build their own organization. You got all these different divisional lines that are drawn in the sand. There's not but a few hundred thousand of us across the globe, and I might even be generous in those numbers.
I think statistically there's like a little over 300,000.
Yeah. And so here we are dividing something that's already very small and then fighting against each other, creating greater division. Now, that's not to say that the different organizations can't exist, and we've had this conversation before. But rather than working against each other where the kingdom falls, right, if we're going to be separate because of whatever reasons or distinctions or decisions or what have you, why can we not still support each other, uplift each other, encourage each other?
Yeah, and so the point I was making, which you continued on strongly with, is what is the determining factor of the kingdom? In other words, for instance, there have to be certain things that are hard and fast. For instance, the messiahship of Yeshua, that he is the Messiah of Israel, the one and only Messiah. He came once, he's coming again, is a delineating factor that mm-hmm. says that we mm-hmm. believe in Yeshua, we are doing things in his name. The birth of an Alma, the virgin birth, is a delineating factor. The fact that Yeshua is God, and not a second God of a polytheistic thing, or a creation of God that is lesser or different mm-hmm. than being part of the unique unity that is Echad, is the God of the Bible. There are things like that that are delineating, that are you're either in or out based on. And then there's other things.
Even down to, and we still see it today, It very much still affects the Messianic movement today, and even aspects of the church, that Gnostic issue that was dealt with so much in the first century, the second century, and the early third century, and even in the development of like the Eastern and Western churches, Roman Catholic and Orthodox churches and so on, was that Gnostic idea of the deity of Yeshua. Was he actually God in flesh, or was he a human that had some sort of like the presence of God upon him? Like, one of the Gnostic views was that he at his immersion by John, the Spirit of God, the presence of God was placed upon him, but before he was put on the cross, it was removed from him. So
it's called the adoption theory.
Yep. So that he God could not be killed or what have you. So that, but the deity issue of Yeshua.
Right. So there are things that are clear markers that are, okay, they are among us, they are in our kingdom. And then there's other things, for instance, the level of kashrut that you follow, the even to the understanding of the makeup of the body, Jew and Gentile. How do we understand the involvement of Jews and Gentiles? Now, we're very clear on this podcast where we stand on things concerning that. But I can sit across a table with somebody who doesn't totally agree with me on that and consider them a brother in Messiah, even if we don't agree on those, on perfectly on those things, because I know that I am not where I was at one time either on my beliefs, and we're all growing toward Messiah at different rates. So there are those things that are there. There's no other name given among men whereby we must be saved. That's a hard, fast thing. There are other things that we can talk about. And we'll talk about on this podcast that divide us in beliefs, but don't divide us in faith.
Right.
And that has to be something that we can talk about, because otherwise we're going to schism so much that we have no effect on the world because we're divided, because we don't have that love one for another that Yeshua said would mark us as disciples.
I think that for me, I'm willing to reach across. So I guess really to break it down in layman's terms, the question is, when do you not reach across the aisle? You know, when do you not sit across the table? And for me, it's anything. If you tell me that I have to do anything outside of faith in the completed work of Yeshua and who he is, his divinity and all those things, like anything that if you raise anything to the equality, or if you raise anything to a level of equality to the gospel or more, I mean, that's like a clear demark. Like, for instance, if you tell me that I haven't received the Holy Spirit because I don't speak in tongues, I'm not saying you're not saved, but I can't work with you if you don't think that I don't have the Holy Spirit because I haven't done that, right? That's just an example. But like, let's look at this as another, and I'll get to a messianic, looking at it from a messianic perspective. I'm just looking at a Christian perspective. You know, you don't have to eat kosher for me to reach across the aisle. You don't have to worship on the Shabbat. I even look at situations like, I believe that, and this is just me, I'm just going to put it out there, you know, I believe that there are Mormons that are saved. I don't agree with their acceptance of Joseph Smith and all that, but I think there are some that have a genuine faith in Yeshua. You know, I believe that. I don't think every necessarily person in a Baptist church is really saved, or every person in a Messianic synagogue is really saved, but it's hard for me to say, well, if you're a Mormon, you're not saved. Or if you're Seventh-day Adventist, because they accept a prophet. What is it, Ellen White or something? Is that the name, Ellen White?
Ellen G. White.
Ellen G. White, right.
There's a couple others, I think.
Yeah, and I don't agree with that either. But they believe in Yeshua as the Messiah, so I have to believe that they have some legitimate faith there. And, you know, I think that, you know, it's a case-by-case basis.
Yeah.
I will say, as far as a messianic perspective, if you tell me I have to do anything outside of, again, believing in the completed work of the gospel, I can't reach it, sit across the table. I have sat at the table and across the table from Jewish people who, because obviously a thing that I'm very passionate about is the equality between the Jew and the Gentile, distinct yet equal, you know, but still operating within the Messianic movement and allowing Gentiles to have participation and be in leadership and things like that. Not making them Jews doesn't make them Jews, right? But allowing that, I have sat at the table and across the table from rabbis that and leaders that I know don't agree with me on that and are more hard-nosed on limiting those things. I will say this, it's harder as a Gentile to sit across from them. I think if I were Jewish, maybe, because they're not applying their ire to me.
Right.
But I'm a Gentile, so I'm kind of like, it's harder to sit across from you and I love you and all that, but like you look at me different and that's kind of weird. You know what I'm saying? It's uncomfortable.
The other day I was teaching at a Baptist church. Rabbi David happened to be there with me that day. And someone asked me how long I believed it was before the rapture was going to happen. And I responded by saying, you're making an assumption that I believe in the rapture in asking me that question. Now, and then I went on to say, I'm also saying right now that some of you, because I said that, are assuming I don't believe in the rapture.
Right.
When at that point in time, I hadn't said what I believe. Mm-hmm. But the reality is there are people within the body, both within Messianic Judaism and outside of Messianic Judaism, that if you don't have the right stand on when the Lord is going to return, how he's going to return, right, whether it's premillennial, postmillennial, in the middle, amillennial, whatever it is, that they'll disfellowship you because of your understanding of the end time scenarios. And I don't think we should do that. And people make assumptions based mm-hmm. on things that aren't even there. We had a discussion this last Saturday at our synagogue because somebody who was visiting the synagogue made the statement that we know the two witnesses in Revelation are Moses and Elijah. And I said, no, we don't know that. What we know is that there are two witnesses. We know that there is a mention of Moses and Elijah at the end of Malachi that people apply to the Revelation passages.
Right.
But and we know why some people say Moses and Elijah. And I'm not saying it's not Moses and Elijah. I'm saying we don't know that. We don't know that it's Elijah and Enoch because there's those who believe it was Elijah and Enoch. There are those who believe it's the two angels that we see in the garden, that we see throughout the scriptures, these two angels that go to Sodom and Gomorrah, the two angels, and so on. So we don't have that understanding of exactly who that is, and there isn't scriptural basis to say dogmatically this is what this is. But there are communities that will dissolve over something that we don't have. There are things in the Bible we know are absolutes. There are others that aren't, like the return of the Lord. What does that look like? Do we actually physically rise to meet in the air, or is that a euphemism for rising and meeting the king as he comes to the community, to the city? All of those things, when is he coming? What's going to happen when he comes? All of those things are things that are up for debate. What isn't up for debate to me as a believer and what makes us in the same kingdom is that he is coming.
Yeah.
We know he will come.
Right.
Yeah.
And we know that, but we don't know exactly when. So if I'm sitting across the table with somebody who believes that Messiah has come, that he is our only way of salvation, and that he is returning to take a bride unto himself, I can fellowship, regardless of when those things happen.
But there are certain principles that I just don't know if I, because I'm willing to identify, and acknowledge that if you have faith in Yeshua as the Messiah, that you're saved. It's principles like other requirements, the speaking in tongues thing, or even and I don't know how large this movement is in the body of believers, the church at large, but
Pentecostal.
It has a name, but they believe that once you become saved, if you're truly saved, then you can reach a state of sinless perfection in this life.
Right, and there's also
How can I?
Yeah, we had a man call our radio program when we had it, who insisted that because he was a believer, he could not sin. That because the Bible says if you are a believer, you can't sin or you won't sin.
Reminds me of that.
Yeah. While his flesh would sin, he said his soul would remain. Yeah.
See, that's a Gnostic
sanctified
thing. That's a very Gnostic thing,
right.
Where the idea was that like the flesh is the bad, and the spirit is the good, and it's made good by by Messiah.
And that idea comes counter to if you say you don't sin, you're a liar. But there are these things, and like Rabbi Toby says, the thing about whether you have to talk in tongues to be born again. Things like when Yeshua is coming back. Things like I'm trying to think of some of the others that are out there. Shabbat. Because and when I say Shabbat, I believe we should observe Shabbat.
Right.
But there's argument about when Shabbat is. There's people out there that believe that Shabbat changes every month.
Yeah.
The lunar Sabbatarian. Well,
those people usually believe other things.
Yes. Right. I had a whole conversation with somebody that visited the synagogue about that. Doesn't the Shabbat move based off the moon?
No.
I'm saying is that we actually have people in our community that are faithful members of our congregation now that came from those groups.
Yeah.
And if we had rejected them as having any faith in Messiah because they were part of a sacred name group or a different calendar group or these things, instead of saying, like Aquila and Priscilla, let me show you a more excellent way.
Yeah. Right.
Then we were, and so part of this conversation is, like I said, determining. These are important issues. All the things we're talking about, the return of the Lord, I think that's important. I think the scripture gives us a lot of information about that and says for us to be watching and that he's not going to come as a thief in the night to those who are watching.
Yep.
But at the same time, I think we need to be careful where we build our wall of what makes in and out, what is us and what
and
is not.
And that's the thing, like, as a rabbi, our goal, our job, our focus is the health of our community, the spiritual health and so on of our community. And we're charged to be shomrim, to be watchmen and guards and care for our flock, right? And like at CMC, one of the things, and I talk about this quite a bit, one of the things I do is I listen when new people come in, because I'm well aware YouTube's a thing. Right, I'm well aware that there's a lot of really weird stuff that's taught on YouTube, supposedly as being messianic or whatever. And so I have like key words that I listen to when people are listening for when new people come in. And when I hear those, little sound bites, little things. And when I hear one of those, I'll kind of test the waters to see if they're teachable. Mm-hmm. You know, and I usually won't do it the very first time they're there. But, you know, the second or third time they're there, when I hear, like, I'm listening for it the whole time, but when I hear some, I'll just test the waters and I'll throw a little curveball into the mix just to see how they're going to react. And sometimes they'll react by going, oh, no, that makes sense. Yeah, no, I hadn't even thought about that. And you can tell somebody's teachable. But then you can see, well, you know, so-and-so said this and that, and they get all riled up. And you know what? You're probably not going to be a good fit here.
Or they come, they sit next to you, and they, like, slam their Bible. All right, I want to talk about something. I'm like, man, dude, calm down, dude. Why don't you eat a sandwich and goof off a little bit?
Yeah, but you can usually tell when somebody's going to be teachable.
This has to stop.
And that doesn't mean that like we necessarily know everything by any means, right? And I'm more than happy to admit when I'm wrong, right? Yeah. And I tell people at our congregation, look, if you heard me say something that you aren't comfortable with in a sermon, prove me I'm wrong.
Right.
Like, do the diligence. Go take the time to study and come show. Sure. I would rather you tell me I'm wrong, me realize it, and correct that so I'm not wrong going forward in that area than for you to just assume that I was right or be upset that I was wrong and leave.
Right.
Like, let's work together on this, right? And so it's important that in that community we have that ability to correct each other and to work together in that. But we can't do that. Like you were saying, if you just push people away immediately, you can't do that.
You can't push people away because in my experience in the Messianic movement and being in leadership in Messianic movement for almost 20 years, if they come in and they're going to be obstinate or they're going to have an agenda or they're just not going to be teachable, as Rabbi David said, they're not going to make it.
Right. And a lot of these people, Toby, and we've talked about this before, are hurt people. They're people that were reading their Bible, found something like Shabbat or like the holy days or like any of the various things that people find, and they're searching for something, but they're leaving hurt. I have been lied to all my life, and now I'm looking for truth, and they have found their one nugget of truth that they're holding on to with desperation.
Yeah.
And if they come to our congregations and the first thing we do is, you know, burn up their one nugget, without teaching them, we're going to end up running them off when we could actually help them and give them a firm foundation to stand on.
Yeah, so our official stance is we don't just kick anybody out. Like, you know, like even you, even Rabbi Eric welcomed the guy who stapled the phylacteries on his hat, you know, and
But
well, that's just
but silly. Leadership has to do their job and their due diligence. Like right. Rabbi Eric said, you're wearing those wrong. So like right. I remember years ago at the first congregation I attended, there was a person, they were Jewish, and they actually openly stated they felt that Jewish people were more important to God, and they you know, like, hey, you're grafted in, happy to have you here, right. but I'm Jewish.
Right.
They openly said that. That person lasted a few years, and they were gone.
Yeah.
They were gone. That if leadership is doing its job, you know, or I remember when me and Brooke were at Savannah, and there was a guy that showed up, and he had like an arsenal. I mean, you ever seen the movie Commando with Arnold Schwarzenegger? He had like shofars on him like that. He had like different sizes and all, and in different bags, and...
I got a holster for this one.
Yeah. I'm picturing the movies where you had to do with a trench coat and he opens it up and it's just right. lined with watches.
I mean, basically, it was something like that. And this guy comes in and he's there one day and he's like offering to teach classes on this, that, and the other. He lasted 2 weeks and he was gone. So, you know, you should give someone the opportunity to come in and receive correction. Maybe he could have came in and said and been humbled, or maybe right. this person I'm talking about at the first congregation could have said, you know what, I've been wrong. Right. I've made my identity as a Jew idolatry. I'm not better than Gentiles, but they didn't. Instead, right. they burned out
right.
in a blaze of not glory, but yeah, something.
One of my closest friends in the Messianic movement came out of the Hebrew Roots movement, and when he came and visited our synagogue the very first time, we talked. I found out where he was from and all, and I very pointedly but kindly told him there's some certain things that you may do that I would ask you to not do during our service or not do while you're here, and we can talk about them one-on-one afterwards, but please be respectful to our community. And so over a period of time, we had coffee, we had lunches, we talked, we studied the scriptures together, and he was able to hold on to those things of his faith that were biblical and accurate and strong and true,
right.
and release those things that had become part of what he believed based upon somebody teaching him something that wasn't biblical. And we all have to be willing to do that. And I tell people all the time, I was raised in traditional Judaism not believing that Yeshua is the Messiah. So I have a history of making dramatic changes when I find something in the scripture that's true.
Right.
So I'm not asking other people to do something I wasn't willing to do myself. And so it's important. But these issues that we're talking about, they're divisive, calendars, when Rosh Chodesh is or it isn't.
Genealogies.
The law.
You know, how much of the law, the Talmud or no Talmud, and to what aspects of those things are yeah. all things that we can educate, we can mm-hmm. teach, we can have different opinions of while still be fellowshipping in Yeshua.
Yeah.
There's only a handful of issues that right. are, yeah. that are these are make or break things.
What is it that Paul says, you know, avoid foolish controversies
and genealogy, but I want to say,
and the law.
It just made me realize, it's kind of like there's things that the Bible stares like certain things right in your face, and you can read the Bible for years, and it's right. like, I've been saying this for years, and you didn't realize it. I guess I kind of just realized this revelation that even as early as Yeshua walking around, there were problems in the amidst the people who mm-hmm. believed in him.
Right.
So there, even Yeshua is having to tell the disciples, like, hey, leave them alone.
Right.
Stop. Right. You know, and then, of course, Yeshua leaves and Paul starts planting congregations. And what's the first thing that happens? He deals with problems.
Yeah. Right.
And then Peter. And then Peter and Paul are two leaders that are having... This is within just a few years.
Yeah,
right.
And so,
not long at all.
So we shouldn't be so surprised, I think, in one sense.
Well, I think the book of Acts gives us kind of a warning about, like, if you don't come into... Mm-hmm. If you do not bring yourselves into unity, like, you will be powerless. Mm-hmm. There's the one, I think it's Acts 19, where the story is where there's someone who's not a part of the body, mm-hmm. who's driving out demons using Yeshua's name. And the demons are like, we know Yeshua.
We know Paul.
We know Paul.
But we don't know you.
But who are you?
Right. These things were happening right out the gate. The Roman Catholic Church didn't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was happening.
And here's the thing. Like, I want to bring us back to Luke 9 for a second because context is important here, right? Mm-hmm. So let's look at the beginning of the chapter. If you have your Bible, feel free to open it and look through it yourself. I'm not going to read through it all. But the beginning of the chapter, Luke 9, opens with Yeshua empowering the disciples to go and do signs and wonders, right? So they get at least a taste of the Spirit to go and do signs and wonders. And they come back and they report to Yeshua all these phenomenal things that God did for them or through them, right? And then we go to the feeding of the thousands and all this. So there's this, you know, they should have this amped up faith in what God can do. Then we get towards the tail end of the book, right? Or the tail end of the chapter. And we've got verse 37 is actually where the context that we're dealing with this passage of 49 and 50 come from. But verse 37 is somebody coming to Yeshua and saying, hey, my kid has this demonic oppression that is causing all of this havoc in his life and nothing's happening. He says, I brought him to your disciples. They didn't do anything. They couldn't do anything about it, right? And so you just had the disciples were empowered to go do signs and wonders, drive out demons, all this kind of stuff. And then they come back to report all of these phenomenal things that God did through them. And then all of a sudden, here comes this guy who goes, yeah, but listen, you didn't do anything here. You couldn't do something here for whatever reason. And Yeshua says, oh, you faithful, faithless and twisted generation, how long shall I be with you and put up with you? Bring your son here. And then he frees this kid of this demonic oppression. And then this conversation begins to develop among the disciples where they're going, but wait, I'm better than you, and I'm better than you, and who's the greatest? And we're really, and there's this like background argument that's going on. And then Yeshua kind of schools them on that. So then their response was, oh, wait, no, you're right. Maybe none of us are the greatest, but there was this dude that was doing stuff in your name, and we tried to stop him to hold you. And Yeshua's like, you're still not getting it.
Yeah.
What is wrong with you? You're still not getting it, right? John 17, Yeshua says, I pray not for these that are with me, but all those that would come to know you because of their message, talking about the gospels, who we came to faith in Yeshua because of, that they would be one as I and the Father are one, so that the world would know who sent me, right? And we're broken and divided. We're still not getting the same message that Yeshua accused the disciples of not getting,
right?
We're still fighting over this stupid stuff. Who's the greatest? Who's the best? Who's the, you know, who performs the most signs and wonders in the Spirit? Who's the one that does this the most? Who's the one that does that the most? Who's the one that has the greatest message? And the reality is Yeshua is still just saying, you just don't get it, guys.
Yeah, it's interesting that we see in this verse where Yeshua empowers his disciples, and the response is to start arguing over who's the most powerful and who's the most important.
And yeah, even their moms got involved.
And then when Yeshua chastises them for fighting amongst themselves, they decide, okay, what we're going to do is fight against somebody else. Instead of working together, the response is, and the truth is, and I've told this to people before, if you have a group of people that are angry at somebody and they're divisive over that, and that person leaves, the spirit that caused that anger isn't leaving just because that person leaves. They're just going to look for someone else to be angry at.
They'll get angry about something
else. It just transfers to someone else.
Angry people stay angry.
And that's what's happened. The disciples were angry at each other. And then when Yeshua says, you shouldn't be angry at each other, they say, okay, but we still want to be angry. We just want to be angry at someone else. And Yeshua then tells them, you're still being angry with your own people. You're still fighting amongst yourselves. Stop that. And I have seen so much, especially within the Messianic movement, where people fight over, okay, who is the father of Messianic Judaism? Is it this person or that person? Mm-hmm. Which organization is most important? This one or that one. Who did this? And instead of working together, we end up starting 27 different groups to do exactly the same thing, to fight over exactly the same funds, to help exactly the same people, where if we would just say, it doesn't matter who gets the credit, it's about Yeshua. Right. It's about him. Then we wouldn't have this, and we would have one unified group working together to be a light to the nations. Yeah. And it's just really problematic that we're doing the same thing. There are groups in Israel that are feeding the poor, meeting the needs of people, doing things that won't work together, even though they're both believers in Yeshua, because they just don't want to be together.
Right.
There's no reason theologically that they can't, other than they're not from my group. It's the same as the ridiculous when we go outside of Messianic Judaism and you look at kashrut symbols,
right?
The hectares, and there's, you know, 40 different ones. Well, why do we have to have 40 different symbols that something's kosher? It's because each of those groups didn't want to take the opinion of the group that came before.
He talked about shrimp before pork, so
no.
So and so we have to stop this. If we're going to have the effect we need to have, we need to understand that our unity comes through our faith in Yeshua. Right. And if somebody has faith in Yeshua, I want to work with them until there comes to a place where their belief system violates the tenets of our faith, the actual tenets of our faith, and not just that they have more to understand or more to learn, or they look at prophecy different than I do, or one of those things, or even their vision is different. I'm totally okay working with a group whose vision is to go into churches and teach Jewish people about the Jewish Messiah and have no plan on ever starting a Messianic congregation under their organization. It's okay with me that they have a different vision than I do. Some people may want to have an internet ministry and not a congregational ministry. I'm okay with them having a different vision than I do. There's some people that want to be a humanitarian aid organization and show and demonstrate the love of Messiah through giving. I'm okay if their vision is different than mine, as long as their theology is sound, as long as their belief in Yeshua is sound.
And as long as they understand that just because they're doing something other than what we're doing doesn't make them better than
exactly
who we are,
right,
but rather that we are all together in the same fight. We're all together working for his kingdom, not our own. And I think that's, we talked about this before, that idea of tribalism. Yeah. I think that's really what it boils down to, is we want our tribe to be the one that's the best and the one that's in charge.
And as long as you're actually doing something for the kingdom, you know, as long as you are teaching people about what it means to live for Yeshua, or ministering to the needs of other people on behalf of Yeshua. Because, like, I've as someone who, like, kind of, like, left Hebrew roots, like, fringes, like, I've been in congregations where, they sing some worship songs, but then the whole objective of their meeting is just to sit around and talk about how much they hate Christians. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's it. Like, that's their whole identity is wrapped up in the fact that they hate people who don't go to a building and sing worship songs on Saturday. Like, if you don't go and sing, ironically, if you don't go and sing contemporary Christian songs on Saturday, you're of the devil. And that's the whole, like, that's what they are. And I'm like, no, you can't. You are achieving nothing.
Right.
And you will remain nothing.
And in this case, in the writings in Luke that we're reading about, the disciples were angry at this other group for doing exactly what they were doing the way they were doing it.
Right.
It wasn't even that there was a theological difference at this point. It was just they're doing what we're doing, and they're not with us, so we're against them.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, and Yeshua made it very clear they may not be in your group, but they are part of your group.
Right. Yeah, it's like me and my wife and I recently went to go see the new Angel Studios movie, Cabrini, that got put out. Mm-hmm. And there are people who won't go see that movie simply because she was a Catholic. And that's, like, their whole thing, their whole reason for not going, oh, she was Catholic.
I don't
the devil?
I don't understand that.
She did, like, all the things Yeshua tells us to do in the world, she did.
Yeah.
You know, the important things. Like, okay, maybe she didn't keep Saturday. Okay.
Okay. Maybe she venerated Mary. Okay.
She might not have eaten completely how you think is correct. Okay. But she did all the things that, you know, when Yeshua says, like, here's the things that are going to get you on the right side, you know, ministering to the sick, the poor, the widow, the orphan.
Yeah.
These things, you did all that.
I honestly think you could feed the poor and take care of the sick and the orphan and the widow. You could do that with a non-believer.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing in that movie, and I've not seen the movie.
That's good. That's
at
good.
All.
I encourage people
but
to see it.
Just because you go see a movie that encourages you to do the right things and follow those aspects of Yeshua's teaching doesn't say the person that did it is saved or lost. It's not making a determination. It's just saying these are the teachings of Yeshua, regardless of whether the person that was doing them, the judge, we don't have to judge that movie based upon, is this person who did these things saved or lost based on their Catholicism or right. their Judaism or their Baptistism or right. whichever group they were from.
Baptistism.
But we can look at what they do and say, hey, we could learn from applying these teachings of Yeshua. And if we don't think they're right, we should at least do the things they were doing
right.
to make ourselves right. Otherwise, both are wrong.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just. It, yeah. Pick the. If you're going to pick something to be opposed to, make sure it's like a good thing to be opposed to.
Yeah, you know, I have a friend that yeah. recently asked me about, actually several friends that recently asked me about the movie The Chosen, or the new season started recently again, or it was at the movies, they were playing it, and there was things going on. I said, what do I think about The Chosen? And I said, well, I honestly haven't seen it, and I don't intend to see it, but that's my own thing. But I'm not against it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing, I would rather have people watching The Chosen than watching a lot of the other stuff out there that the same people that won't watch The Chosen will watch, even though the teachings of those other things are totally contrary to everything in the Bible, and at least The Chosen gets something.
Yeah,
you know? Well, yeah, and that's like true. At the very beginning, every time you know an episode begins, this is based on stories from the Gospels. We encourage you to go read the Gospels. I'm like, bro, I mean, if you have no, because the thing is, believers, I think, sometimes take for granted their knowledge of the Bible, of Yeshua, and of God. Mm-hmm. They don't realize, like, if you actually go and, like, communicate with other human beings and not just argue in echo chambers on the internet, like, you actually realize that, oh my goodness, people actually don't know that much about Yeshua. People right. actually don't know about the Bible or about God. They only know what secular society tells them about it. But if you're actually encouraged to go read from the Gospels, and then you watch a show that is, I would say, moving, you know, in what it mean, you know, what God's compassion looked like embodied in flesh in the world, like, that's going to be powerful, and that's actually going to get more people to
yeah.
look into who Yeshua was versus
exactly.
not at all.
Exactly. Right. Recently, on my Facebook, a memory came up from 12 years ago, 12 or 13 years ago. We made a commercial for our synagogue that we aired on television.
Was it the first century one, the first century
yeah.
worship one?
Yeah. It's been a long time ago, but it was...
I got to see that.
We had it done by a commercial maker. Professional people made the commercial. But the reason we made it was because on regular television, on I think it was the History Channel or... I think it was a History Channel. They did a series that was promoted or produced by Roma Downey, who was one of the angels from Touched by an Angel. But it was a series on the Bible.
Oh.
And people were buzzed about it, and people were watching it. And we said, look, people are already thinking about the Bible. What would it be if we were to put a commercial for our synagogue that played during that movie? That wasn't saying the movie was all accurate or anything, but
sure.
But if they're already thinking about the Bible at this point, you have families gathered around watching a movie about the Bible, why not have a commercial that says, hey, as long as you're thinking about the Bible, why not come visit our congregation where we teach the Bible? And so we did that, and it didn't cost very much. It was a cable program, so it was really, I think we spent $900, and we had like 80 commercials that aired, and it was on every episode of the Bible.
Oh, wow.
But our commercial wasn't us endorsing the movie The Bible. It was our using it as a jumping point to endorse God and what he was doing and to encourage people to come visit our congregation.
Right.
That's
right.
The same way I look at The Chosen. The same way I look at many of the David and Goliath, the old cartoon the kids would watch. I don't think everything that was taught on it is completely accurate, and I don't think dogs talk. Mm-hmm. But if people are thinking about God, I think it's a good time for us to insert ourselves into the conversation and try to teach them how to do things. So we have to be careful in our judgment of how we judge people. Are we promoting things that are biblical,
right.
and those things, and then taking from that starting point and using that as a jumping off point to teach more Bible, or are we just rejecting an opportunity we might have when the conversation is already happening?
right,
to share with people those things.
Well, and I would say it needs to also be like what's biblical and what's been handed down as being biblical,
right,
must be passed down together. Because I'd heard it said one time, the greatest danger of Protestantism is all it requires to completely go off base is for someone else to go, I have a book and I have an interpretation of it. Right. And next thing you know.
Right. And we need to remember that Yeshua hung out in places where sinners were,
right,
and had conversations with them from there. Now, he didn't participate in their sin, mm-hmm, but he also didn't stay away from where sinners were.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
He didn't wait. He went to the synagogue and worshiped, but he went into the world to minister. Yeah.
Well, and with that, one of the like popular catchphrases in the body today is God will meet you where you are, right? And that's true because, like you said, he was in places where sinners were. He wasn't participating, but he was there so that he could meet them where they were.
It's the sick that are in need of a doctor.
But he didn't expect them to stay there once they met him.
Right. Exactly.
Right? When he meets you where you are, his expectation is you're going to want to leave where you are and go where he's going,
right,
not stay where you are. Right? When you encounter the power of God, it transforms you, it changes you,
right,
and you should want to follow that to continue in that transformation.
It's like when you're in the ICU of sin, you know, God's like, all right, bro, Seth, you got to put a little elbow grease in taking this medicine and making sure that you're going to do the therapy to get you out of here to the hospital room so then I can work on you there and get you out of here and get you on the right path.
Exactly.
And again, when in back to our Luke passage, Yeshua doesn't validate everything these people were doing, but he does say they're doing it in my name. And they are casting out demons, and they are for you.
Yeah, he's saying they aren't invalidating me.
Yeah, but when you think about it, here we have Yeshua's disciples that are traveling with Yeshua. And Yeshua tells, and they're against these people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And Yeshua says, here's these people that aren't traveling with me. They don't know me. They don't have an intimate relationship with me. They don't have all of this. And yet they're for you when you're not for them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
and we need to be really careful that we don't become.
Say that again.
Here's these people that Yeshua says these people may not be you, mm-hmm, but they're for you, and you guys are against them. And we really need to get to a place where we're not against everybody who's for us.
Right, that's a good point.
I just wanted you to say it again in case people in the back didn't listen.
Yeah,
yeah,
I appreciate that. Anyhow, this has been a great conversation, and we hope that you've enjoyed it, that it's been meaningful to you. If you have any questions, comments, thoughts, if you'd like to add to the conversation, please go to our sites where you find this podcast and comment on there. We will try to respond to them or respond on a future podcast. Also, please do us a favor. Subscribe, like, share this podcast with your friends and people that you think it would be of benefit to. And shalom.
Thank you for listening to the Messy Antics Podcast. Make sure to subscribe so you can be notified every time we drop a new episode. And be sure to follow and interact with us on social media at Messy Antics Podcast.